On Tuesday, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia announced that it had carried out a mass execution of 37 people. Some of them were minors when they were detained. The execution comes more than 6 months after the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate office in Istanbul. While global outrage over Khashoggi's killing put a spotlight on the kingdom's use of violence, the recent execution showed that the Saudi government has continued its heavy-handed approach to dealing with internal dissent. Joining me now is Madawi Al-Rashid, a visiting professor at the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics. Madawi, welcome to The Takeaway.
Well, thank you.
What do we know about the 37 people who were killed this week?
According to the Saudi press agency, they just simply listed the names of the executed prisoners. But thanks to activists, almost all of them are now outside Saudi Arabia. We have little biographies of those executed. There are one or two murderers, and they're accused of serious crimes. One of them was accused of killing a Saudi police officer who happened to be his uncle. And according to the government statement, the murderer was radical Islamist who had sympathies with the Islamic State, ISIS. But the rest of them are academics, young activists, professionals, religious scholars. And most of those, almost 33 prisoners, had come from the Shia minority in Saudi Arabia, which lives in the eastern province of the country where the oil fields are. This Shia minority, which is around 10 to 15% of the total 33 million Saudis, had been marginalized, and it had always been active in mobilization in order to gain equality with the rest of Saudi citizens. So their execution comes as a shock to this community. But this community, since 2011, had lost almost 25 activists who were shot in the streets of cities like Qatif in the eastern province where the majority of the Shia community live.
How common is capital punishment in Saudi Arabia, particularly this use of beheading prisoners?
Well, in addition to beheading, there was one case of crucifixion, according to the government statement. After the a prisoner was executed, he was crucified. The death penalty, obviously, is practiced in Saudi Arabia, and it is on the rise. According to Amnesty International, in 2018, there were almost 148 executions. In the last 4 months, which is just beginning of year 2019, we have almost 104 executions. It's very, very common. And it is worrying. It is worrying simply because we do not have an independent judiciary in Saudi Arabia. There are no open courts. Most of the prisoners would have had limited access to lawyers to defend them. And we are only faced with a government statement with very vague accusations and charges against those prisoners. These vague charges make almost everybody, especially the International Human Rights Organization and Saudi activists, very, very suspicious about the fairness of these trials that led to the beheading and crucifixion.
Madawi, maybe we can step back a bit and explain the current state of relations between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Give us a snapshot.
It is very important to think of the political context in which these executions take place. Iran and Saudi Arabia are entering a fierce struggle over hegemony in the Middle East. And in 2016, as you mentioned, there was a huge cohort of prisoners who were executed. Amongst them was Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, a Shia cleric who had been very active in mobilizing his own community to protest. And it was all peaceful protest at the time. When he was beheaded, Iran reacted to this by condemning the execution, but also there was an incident whereby the Saudi embassy in Tehran was attacked by mobs, and it led to a serious deterioration in the relationship between the two countries, which had already been bad since the late 1970s, 1979 specifically, after the Iranian Revolution. So the issue is, this execution is only going to make the relationship even more tense. But I think the real problem is domestically in Saudi Arabia with the Shia community that live there. And Iran can condemn this, but it is not going to do anything else. The Shia of the eastern province in Saudi Arabia are really the victims of this injustice.
Mandawi, I want to turn a little bit more to the U.S. relationship here and how that could be influencing what's happening in Saudi Arabia and in Iran. The U.S. has been cutting Iran off, including sanctions. And just this week, they tried to block all countries from importing Iranian oil. How does this play into Saudi Arabian interests?
Well, it is actually in Saudi Arabia's interest that the U.S. does all these kind of things, from sanctions to blocking Iranian export, etc., simply because the Saudi regime wants to be the only interlocutor in the Middle East that the U.S. can talk to. And let's not forget, American foreign policy and its close ties with Saudi Arabia are based on certain principles. One of them is that Saudi Arabia is a partner in the fight against terrorism. The second one, as Mr. Trump made it clear, that Saudi Arabia is indispensable for containing Iran in the Middle East. And therefore, Saudi Arabia benefits from this American position that actually does not fully reflect the situation on the ground in the Middle East.
Where do you see this relationship headed, Mandawi? Where do you see this headed, with the United States continuing to press and cut off Iran and continuing to strengthen its relationship with Saudi Arabia? We just had a report yesterday that showed that American businesses are back in Saudi Arabia following the Khashoggi killing. So where do you see this headed ultimately?
Well, it is going to continue as it has continued, and for a very long time, because the U.S. Fails to see the problems of the Saudi regime. The U.S. is very, very open about, for example, the abuse of human rights in Iran. But when it comes to Saudi Arabia, it seems that the country is sacrosanct in the corridors of power in the White House. And simply because Saudi Arabia has a big purchasing power, that it actually can buy American weapons. And the first thing that the American president said about Saudi Arabia when he came to power is that they have money. And he flagged cars to show how much they spend on American arms companies. And therefore, if the relationship continues to be based on arms sale, then I don't see any kind of consideration for human rights or for revisiting the so-called special relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia.
Mandawi Al-Rashid is a visiting professor at the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics. Mandawi, thank you for your time.
Thank you.